You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
All right, we are live here for the Beer Tour Guy Show, episode 12. I got the illustrious, the professional, the timely Mark Larson, owner of Falling Down Beer Company. Thanks for making it out. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for waiting for me.
Yeah, that's what you do when you're sitting here drinking your beer as I'm waiting for you. So it's hard for me to get too mad when you're providing the beer for the studio. Yep. Cheers to that.
Cheers.
We got Angry Beaver with some great caramel malt in it. Nice 4% beer for a beautiful, beautiful Wednesday afternoon here.
Oh, 80 degrees out. Nice light brown.
Oh, that's exactly what I want to drink on a day like this. I got to tell you, last couple of years, I guess I've grown to really love beers in that 4 or 5% range when it's nice warm weather like this. I don't think I always was like that. I want to say when I first got into craft beer, I was always just, you know, go as high as I could all the time, you know, 365.
That's what a lot of people do. Yeah. I've never really paid attention too much to the alcohol content per se. Like, I don't search out the high ones. But I will say since session beers have gotten big, I search them out a little bit more.
But I just think there's more available to us now too.
Yeah.
That, you know, a few years ago, that would have been few and far between. It would have been like the one maybe lightish lager that you brewed for the Bud Light people at your brewery. And then that was probably all you did. And then you moved on to everything else. And now I think as we're more diverse, wouldn't you say?
Yep.
You got to have kind of a wider range like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's been fun. Okay, we jump right into what we're drinking, but let's like back up a little bit and let's kind of when's the last time you've had like a nuts to bolts interview where you've had like a whole hour to talk about your background? Do you ever get to do it that way?
Not in a long time, a couple of years.
Okay. Well, let's do some of that then. I mean, I know a little bit about it, but let's start with what got you into the beer world?
Me and my friend George were home brewers, and we were making so much home brew to give away to other people, we decided to try and start a brewery.
So were you part of any club, or were you guys just doing it on your own?
Yeah, just doing it on our own.
Okay. And is George out – you're outside of – let's see, it's Metamora?
I'm in Metamora, yeah.
You're Metamora. Where's George?
George is in Madison Heights.
Oh, yeah, like totally different. Okay. Yeah. Wow. So how did that happen, George? What, college friend?
No, we worked together. We're work friends, and then we became golf friends.
Okay. Work friends, golf friends, brewing friends.
Yep.
All right. So what industry were you in?
IT.
IT. Okay. Yeah.
I actually do Citrix virtualization.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I know that's a company in the IT world. I'll admit, like, I'm a marketing sales guy. Like, I could sell that, I'm sure. If I did a little research, but I don't know the nuts and bolts of it. So give me some of that. So explain what that means in English.
Well, instead of having a full-fledged computer in front of you, you're presented with a virtual terminal. So maybe just in your web browser, you get a Windows 7 computer, but you can write on your tablet or cell phone or on a dummy terminal, and you don't need the full gun power of a full desktop computer or full laptop computer.
Oh, I get that. Okay.
So, you know, it's a lot of me personally, I was working with Metro PCS, and so all their cash registers were my Citrix systems. That's what I was in charge of.
Okay.
Banks use it a lot. You see those little green screens they're typing into at the bank, same thing. They're not full-fledged computers by any means. Educational institutions, a lot of elementary schools are going to it now, you know, just because the expense of, you know, instead of paying $800 for a desktop computer, you can put in one of these, they call them thin clients, but dummy terminals for a couple hundred bucks.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
So in big shared classrooms like that, it's a lot cheaper to go that route.
Okay. So how long were you in that industry? You're not now, correct?
I still am.
Oh, I'm sorry. You still are. Oh, I guess I didn't realize that. Okay. So you've been in that industry for a while.
Yeah, 20 years.
Oh, yeah. That's in in real people world, that's a lot of years nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now that we're in our 40s, you in your 40s?
Yeah.
Okay.
47.
47. Oh, wow. I didn't realize how close we were in age. I'm 46. So wait, when am I? 46? Yeah, I'll be 46 this year. Let me think about that. My wife just turned 46 and she's a little – I always say she's older than me. But we're born in – I'm a 72, so that would make you what, a 71?
70 actually.
Oops. Yeah. See, I can't even do math. Okay.
No, that's fine. My parents started me late, so that's why.
Yeah, and I have a December birthday, so that always put me in a weird spot.
Yeah, I'll be 48 in October.
In October, okay, cool. I don't always ask people their age on here, but I figured we were the same age, so I could get away with it. Right. A lot of times when I'm doing tours and I have mixed ages, I'm always real careful to not ask that too much to people. Some people don't want to. It's funny how we're guys, I guess we don't typically care, but sometimes women real sensitive about their age. So I don't know, maybe it's because I've been married a while that like I try to be real careful and not make, I don't know, age jokes. But as a tour guide and where I'm sometimes doing history and I'm speaking to crowds, especially when I do stuff where I was promoting the Detroit Beer Book, I would have these mixed age groups. A lot of times, sometimes I have much older groups. And it's like, I'd be like, from your generation. And then some people look at me and smile, you know. And but you always try to like dance around that and not say like, you know, for all the old people in the crowd,
right.
I'm asking you this question because I'm assuming you were around when that happened, you know. And you try to.
When I was your age, the snow was up to my chin.
that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Now that we're somewhere, you know, in the upper part of the middle, I guess, I don't know what I'm saying. Like we're all just getting closer to 50. That seemed so old though when we were younger, didn't it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know? And I don't know. I forget that there's probably people that look out at us now, you know, the youngins, and think we are old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of messed up, right? Now I feel like I'm half the time when I'm talking, I'm trying to give older people knowledge that I'm sure when I was younger, I would just roll my eyes at people when they would say stuff like that to me. So, okay, that got us off the subject a little bit. Let's get off age. So, okay, so you and George started brewing beer, and then eventually you said, let's start a brewery.
Yep.
So how did you arrive at your first location in Warren? Like, talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, so we basically had no money. You know, we're just trying to figure out, you know, at the time, this is 7 years ago.
You know, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
That we started planning all this. And, you know, we were convinced we could just throw up a card table, put some taps up there, and sell some beer, right?
That stuff just happens.
That was our attitude. So it was, we were trying to find a building we could go into. And what happened was we could never find anything we could afford in any area that we were decently interested in. So just for the heck of it, I threw an ad out on Craigslist and I said, two guys looking to open a brewery, looking for a restaurant to partner with, need space, you know, contact us. And, Mike, the owner of the building that we're currently in, had a diner and he emailed me within a couple hours. And was like, yeah, come, let's talk.
Wow. Okay.
So we worked out a...
What was the name of the diner originally?
It was called My Mother's Place.
Okay.
And for the old timers.
No doubt, right?
It was originally a clock restaurant.
A clock restaurant. Wow. Oh, yeah. I did not know that. Okay. I knew the Mother's. I just hadn't thought about it in a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had never personally heard of clock or seen a clock, but I guess they were a pretty big chain in the area.
Okay. I'm trying to picture any of those. I mean, I grew up in the east side, but yeah, I can't remember those.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Yeah, so we worked out a good deal with Mike, and where we had really good rent rate and basically paid a land contract on it. And the rest is history. We scraped up enough money to remodel, buy some equipment, and we basically, us and a few friends, built the whole place.
What was the original size of the brew system you had in there?
10 barrel.
That was a 10 barrel. I always thought that was smaller. Okay.
Yeah. Old dairy equipment from the 60s that was retrofitted.
Where'd you find that?
There's a guy in Wisconsin that's all he does.
Oh, really?
He runs around, buys old dairy equipment, retrofits it, and sells it off to people starting breweries.
That seems like a smart business model.
Yeah. So then we just bought a couple of fermenters and went to town. It was the cheapest way to get started.
Okay. And was it the two of you brewing as you first started?
Yep.
Okay. When eventually did you bring someone else in on some brewing?
Well, I had the first year, it was mostly me doing all the brewing, and then various friends, I would just say, hey, can you help me brew today?
Okay. That sounds super familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was random assistant every day. And then started doing the classic, hey, are you a home brewer and interested in learning craft beer? Well, here you go. Come and help me brew. And then that rolled into hiring one of those home brewers, Eric Stevenson.
Right. I know Eric.
Is my assistant. So that's how that worked.
Okay.
And that was probably a year and a half in that happened.
That's probably about when I brought a group in maybe the first time. I was trying to look at my records, and I brought groups in a whole bunch of times over the years, but I want to say it was about a year in until maybe I did that the first time. A lot of times that's what I try to do. As you're trying to get your feet wet and figure it all out, it never works the way you think it could or wants to. So when did the food part get brought in? Did you start food right away?
Yep.
You did, didn't you?
We did. The thought was we're in Warren. We're up against Koonin's and Dragon Mead, who, you know, exceptional breweries. They had 10 years on us. Everybody knew them.
Yep.
What was our competitive advantage going to be? So neither of them had any food. So we decided, okay, let's put some money into making a really good high-end pub scratch kitchen. And successful.
I'd say so. Usually that was the biggest comment I would hear from people was, I the beer was great, but I enjoyed the fact that I had food there.
Yeah.
And I'd say at the time when you did that, that wasn't that common really. It still, I guess, to a certain degree isn't, especially with a lot of these new upstarts. It's more of a food truck world.
Yeah, in this area, it's a food truck world. Yeah, I would say that. And it's a lot of places now, like, you know, Founders is doing food. I've noticed the more popular microbreweries become, the more expectation of having a restaurant, and people are expecting more of a brew pub than an actual brewery anymore. So especially in Michigan when you have 400 of them.
Yep.
You know, it's not like when I first started getting into the craft beer, it was like I went to Pennsylvania and stayed with my uncle, and we went to Victory, that huge, gigantic brewery, and it was cool. They had a tasting room. I could go in there and just try their beer on site. How cool is that? You can't get away with that in Michigan anymore. You need the whole experience. It has to be a restaurant and a brew pub. You know, some people are interested in the tours, but others aren't. They're just trying to get beer at the source type of thing. So it's a little different market now.
Yeah, I'd agree. I was just on vacation with my wife and another couple, and we were in Myrtle Beach, and we did a side trip to Charleston. Actually, we did two different side trips out to Charleston, South Carolina. So like half historical stuff and half hitting breweries. And they have a big scene out there. I was surprised. Myrtle Beach, not so much. So Myrtle Beach, vacation town, there really isn't any kind of beer scene in there. A couple chains, it doesn't really matter. But Charleston had lots of stuff going on, and I wasn't real familiar. I wouldn't say there's any names out there that we would really know out here. But I could tell you what I saw as we did about six breweries while we're out there. Every single one of them was in some industrial area where you'd roll open some garage doors, and they were all making good beer. One of them had food of the six we went to.
Yeah.
The rest were occasional food trucks, none of which were on the days we were there, because like one of the days was Monday, and some of them weren't even open Mondays. You know, typically things we would kind of see some of that here, but yeah, wow. And, you know, they'd survive that way. Pretty much just beer. In fact, only maybe one of those even had a winemaker's license. Most of them were just beer,
yeah,
straight up, which sucks because my wife doesn't drink beer. So she's like, what do I do? At least we had a good driver, and she's a good sport about it.
Right.
But yeah, that was totally their model there.
And I think that's an up and coming market.
It's a good example of that.
Michigan's, you know, we've had microbreweries here now for 20 years.
Right.
And, you know, and even as early as 10 years ago, I think that was the business model for Michigan.
Yeah.
But as it got more competitive and more people had to figure out ways of bringing people in, restaurants were the natural next case. So now that's kind of the expectations. So I think you're starting to see that in Florida now too.
Oh, yeah. That's another good example.
So Florida, when I started going down there and hitting microbreweries 5-6 years ago, it was just like that. Industrial area, roll up doors, taste the beer. There was maybe I could get popcorn.
Yep.
Now everywhere, you know, Cigar City's got a chain of restaurants and, you know, all these breweries are opening up with all this. It's awesome food. Don't get me wrong, but it's now a requirement to be a restaurant on top of being a brewery.
Yeah. 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 I'd say so. I mean, think about it. When Kunin opened up that second location, they had food.
Yeah.
Now Dragon Mead does.
Yeah.
Right. They partnered with somebody, and definitely the regular Kunin and Warren, the original location. I mean, they're very regular with food trucks in there. That probably, mm-hmm. if they didn't have that, they'd probably be losing a lot of business.
Yeah.
For sure. So yeah, that's a real interesting observation that sometimes we probably forget that it's adjusted into that realm here.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of your progression then, about kind of beers you started with. And yeah, let's like kind of get a little deeper into some of the beers you started with and kind of some of your fan favorites of what you guys been selling. And then let's get into the Oxford location that you've just finally gotten to open up, and how fun is that? And we'll kind of get into that part of it here.
It wasn't fun opening it.
Yeah,
but it's fun now that it's open.
Well, it's fun for me when I saw you there like last month, because I got to drink and enjoy it. But it seemed simple to me, of course, because I didn't have to do anything, right? But it surely wasn't for you, and you're obviously putting in some hours. But let's talk about kind of some of your beers that kind of stood out right away. Were you surprised by some of the original beers you were brewing, that those became more popular than others? Let's talk about some of those.
Not entirely. I mean, we call Ninja Chicken is our flagship beer. So we always called that the beer who built the brewery. That was the beer from a homebrew days that everybody wanted. Everybody wanted to take it to their wedding, their parties, whatever, football Sundays. And so that was the first beer we brewed. And then I'm a huge stout brown guy. So our first lineup of like six beers was Ninja Chicken, a couple of stouts, and a couple of browns.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, talk about your preference.
Yeah.
So where'd the Ninja Chicken name come from? It's a great name.
Yeah, so we were trying to think up a name for it, and me, George, and my wife, and a few other people were at Buffalo Wild Wings in Ferndale, and because at the time we lived in Ferndale, and
that's when Buffalo Wild Wings was in Ferndale.
Yeah, that one on 9 Mile. Yeah,
yeah, I totally know it.
Yeah, and we were getting tipsy, and it was late. We're eating chicken wings, and all the TVs had Bruce Lee movies on.
Oh my gosh! Okay,
so we're sitting there arguing over names, and my wife Tammy just jumps up and goes, "We should call it Ninja Chicken."
Oh my gosh! Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And everybody but George liked it.
Okay.
So we all outvoted George and then went with it. Now it's a huge name now.
Who did the artwork for that?
Ian Burke.
Oh, Ian. Yeah. You know what? I have asked you that before. That's right. I know Ian.
Yeah. So Detroit Beer Press, they used to be his thing, and great freelance artist. He does a lot of artwork for me.
Yeah. I think I'm going to use him for some projects I have coming up with Motor City Brew Tours. My wife and I were just talking about that, and she goes, "Who would you get?" And I'm like, you know, I was thinking of Ian. Part of that's probably came out of our conversation, where I'm sure I asked you that when I saw you last time out in the Oxford location about your artwork. And I forgot that Ninja Chicken was his. That's cool. Okay.
And what we're drinking here, Nice Beaver, is one of my home brews too.
That's one of your home brews as well?
Yeah. This was my favorite brown I brewed at home, so I carried this over too.
You know, a lot of breweries seem to screw with brown ales, and like this is just a nice, simple English brown ale with the nice caramel malt in it, lower ABV. I honestly, like when I first got into beer, that was definitely same thing, reds and browns, mm-hmm. and then porters and stouts, as I, you know, and I still can drink all those anytime now. It's just a lot of breweries don't have them on draft on a regular basis. It's almost like it's seasonal or something to them, which I always find kind of amusing.
Yeah, I think with the big push into IPAs and everything, and the limited number of taps most breweries have, you know, the darker beers get pushed to the winter.
They definitely do, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can always drink a good brown for sure.
And that was my thought with Nice Beaver. It's a nice 4% brown. It's something you can drink year-round. It doesn't taste heavy. It's, you know, it's good on a hot summer day.
But you do have some good stuff that's got some good booze to it that's heavy. Let's see, Angry Beaver, correct? Is that a double?
That's a double of the Nice Beaver.
It's a double of this. And then you have like a bourbon variant of that, don't you?
Yeah. We aged it in Valentine's bourbon barrels.
Okay. Valentine's bourbon barrels. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. It came out really good, too. Yeah.
Are those hard to get a hold of from Valentine Distilling?
Yeah, Rufino usually has a waiting list, and we just happened to get lucky the day that we grabbed those two. I just happened to be there, and he's like, "You want them?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, here's my money. Take it."
I'll bet you if you looked at his original business plan, selling barrels locally probably wasn't part of it, and now huge thing. I know the owners of Motor City Gas there in Royal Oak, and he even says the same thing, although his are smaller barrels than what Rufino would have over at Valentine.
Yeah, these were 55s.
Yeah. His are – I don't remember the size of those are considered. I don't know if you ever met the Motor City Gas guy. I can't even think of his name now that I just said that. Wow. I didn't do my homework here, did I? Not freelancing real well today. Okay. So Angry Beaver, Nice Beaver, Ninja Chicken.
Yeah. And then the next progression was everybody wanted an IPA. And a little bit of the background in Ninja Chicken is I couldn't stand IPAs. So I wanted all the citrus and hop notes of an IPA without any of the bitterness, and that's where Ninja Chicken came from.
Right. That's why that's so drinkable.
Yeah, and I kind of joke because that's the same thing as a New England IPA, so I joke that Ninja Chicken's actually a clear New England IPA.
I guess I never thought about it like that. Interesting.
Because it's the same thing. New England IPAs aren't really IPAs because the bitterness is so low on them.
Right.
But Eric at the time, my assistant, he was a total hophead, so I started letting him brew a few IPAs, and we started rolling those out. Our next really big hit was Scurvy Dan.
Okay.
So Blood Orange is huge right now. Well,
when you did it, though, that was kind of novel, wasn't it?
It was 5 years ago.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. God, I didn't think of that. Wow.
5 years ago, we made our first Blood Orange IPA.
Way ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah. And it went over like gangbusters. And we still keep it as a summer seasonal. Actually, it just came out this week.
Okay.
And we usually it's our number one seller during the summer, and we only have it for 6 months. So it outsells everything for the full year in 6 months.
Wow. That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Okay. That just shows the power of the IPA, though.
Yeah. And the Blood Orange and everything else, and we finally have a little following on it. So we actually do launch dates like you do in Oberon and everything. So
okay.
It's look pretty at that. Cool.
How professional.
Yeah. Yeah, we coordinated 30 bars putting on tap all at once.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Well, that takes some work.
Yeah.
No wonder you're doing 16-hour days.
Yeah. So
Scurvy Dan's been real well for you. So let's lead that into Oxford location, and let's kind of talk about the you don't have to go all deep into it, but like the progression of it because you live out on that end of town, I see the appeal of you having something out there. And when you first presented to do that, there definitely wasn't another brewery out there at that time.
Right. Yeah. And so what happened is when we started the brewery in Warren, I lived in Ferndale. But my wife had horses.
Okay.
So we decided to...
There's no horse trails or pastures in Ferndale.
No. So we decided to go and buy property. So we bought property up in Goodrich and...
Top Hops Hop Farm?
Yep. Yeah, only a few miles away from where I lived in Goodrich.
Wow. Okay.
And that allowed me to stay on I-75 so I could get to the brewery very easily. So a few years into Warren, we couldn't keep up with distribution. So we had Ninja Chicken and Buffalo Wild Wings. We had Scurvy Dan all over the region. We just couldn't keep up. So what was happening is on our little 10-barrel system in Warren, in the summer, all we brewed was Ninja Chicken and Scurvy Dan. And so here I have 8 taps, but I only can keep 3 or 4 running because I can't brew anything else because that's what's selling. So we decided to look for another place to do a distribution center. And we decided since I was the head brewer, it should be up by me so I can get to it easier than driving the hour down to Warren. So that's how we kind of chose that area. Now, when I was up there, I approached Ortonville, Davison, Lapeer, Oxford, Lake Orion, all those communities, and talked to them about opening a brewery. And
How's that process work then as you do that? Do you go to like a city council meeting? Is that how something like
that? Yeah, most of them have a village manager or a downtown development authority.
Okay.
And they're kind of the front line of, yes, we
have interest in
we have interest in this. You know, they'll get you to the right people to okay your plans and so forth. So coming out of that, 51 North was already in Lake Orion, and I knew those guys really well because they opened at the same time we did in Warren. We argue all the time who was brewery number 127 versus number 128 because we both got our notification at the same time. On the same day, we were sitting in a conference room in Kalamazoo at the Michigan Brewers Guild conference.
Okay.
And my phone went off and Adam's phone went off.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
That's the first time I met you, I believe, was at that conference, winter conference. I don't know if it was that exact one or the one after that. I can't recall. It kind of blends together. But I remember talking to you about you were working on a brewery.
Yeah.
So how funny. Okay. So you got that notice.
Yeah. So
that's exciting.
So that kind of dropped Lake Orion out of the search. One of my requirements was I grew up in a small town. I grew up in Chelsea.
Okay.
And the reason we didn't open the brewery in Chelsea is because Chelsea Ale House was already working on it. They weren't open at the time, but I didn't feel right trying to come in to the town too.
And they've just moved. They're still in Chelsea, but now they're in down. They're
yeah. They closer went to downtown. They went downtown instead of out by the clock.
Yeah, yeah. I was there, December maybe, and I did a beer history talk out there on like a Tuesday. Great, great. I love those guys. I probably brought groups in there a few times, and they're a good asset to that community out there for sure. So I see why you would have been hesitant in that scenario.
Yeah. But I wanted to get – I loved downtown Chelsea and the walking around. You know, it's the same kind of thing like Royal Oak, you know, the walking around and Ferndale and all that. So the Warren Brewery is in this really industrial area, and we get no foot traffic. And definitely you have to know we're there, and we have a tiny parking lot, and it's all hampering us. So my search is for – I wanted to be in a more downtown community to do this. And – or at least off the beaten path, but closer to a downtown like that. Because when I started out, I was looking for strictly production. We weren't even really thinking about having a tasting room when we first started looking. And then when I talked to Oxford, they're like, we really want you downtown. Because I was looking at a building just off of downtown. They're like, no, we'll find you a building downtown. We want you downtown.
Oh, wow. So they were really pushing for it.
Okay. Yeah. So... went to Ortonville. Ortonville was awesome. I really wanted to go to Ortonville, found a great building. Problem with Ortonville is they have no well or sewer. So it would have been septic, or I should say they don't have their own water system or sewer. So it would have been septic and well water. And Oakland County was like, no, you can't put that much water into the septic system and millions of dollars to do it right. And I was like, nope.
Okay. Ooh, yeah. Like big time money. Yeah. That's not going to work.
And then I started talking to Lapeer and found out Tilted Axis was already planning on going in. And then with Oxford really begging us to come, I was like, okay, it's Oxford. And true to their word, they found us a building right downtown in a great area.
Yeah.
Right off a great big parking lot. And that's how that all started up.
Okay. So obviously the nuts and bolts and saga of getting that open took, you know, way longer than you would have probably thought of. But you're open.
We're
so
open now.
Officially open, what is it, about a month ago?
Yeah, just before St. Patrick's Day.
Just before St. Patrick's Day. There we go. How cool. And it was real funny timing that when I saw you last at the brewery was on that opening stretch, and I was out at the other brewery on the same side of the street, a few doors down, Homegrown, doing this beer history talk that I had set up months and months ago.
Right.
So I don't normally get to do something like that. Like, I have a beer there. I talk to a real cool crowd, which is the Oakland Township Historical Society. And then I got to come over and hang out with you in the new tap room. So I got to see everything. Wow. Like, what a night and day difference between, you know, what the space you had in Warren, the space you have in Warren, and, you know, what you've been working with in Oxford in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, you can spread out your brewing equipment, you can get some nicer equipment in there and do your thing. So talk a bit about that system and the space in there and what people can expect when they come out to the Oxford tasting room.
Yeah. So, you know, we wanted to do this one right. You know, we knew Warren was, you know, every dollar we could scrap up, we threw into it, but it was still, you know, we built everything by hand. It was still kind of a rundown building in an industrial area.
So, sure. Those are things you can't overcome. Really.
Right, right.
There's nothing you can do about that.
So we decided to go into this and make it brand spanking new, buy brand new equipment, custom build everything and make it – and we're going for like kind of a rustic look to fit the town. So the first thing we started off is we called Craftwork and bought a brand new 7-barrel system. It sounds like we're going down in barrelage, but the difference is in Warren we had 2 fermenters and 1 bright tank. In Oxford we have 6 fermenters and 3 bright tanks.
Yeah, wow.
So we're actually going from brewing 400 barrels a year to 1600 barrels a year. That's even a big difference. The system's a little bit smaller.
Okay.
We can just pump them out that fast on that system.
You got more efficiency.
Oh yeah, and the efficiency is insane on it. Yeah. You know, we're running, from a beer standpoint, we're running at like 68% efficiency in the Warren system. Here we're running 85% efficient.
That's a huge difference.
It's a huge jump. So, and, you know, to the layman, that's lowers your costs. It's a better product, less ingredients, more control, more consistent.
What would like a macro brewer be in efficiency percentages, you think? I feel like I never get to hear that when I do some of those, you know, huge brewery tours.
I would always mention that number. They're probably pushing 90.
Yeah, they're probably in that 90. Yeah, that makes sense. So the fact that you're where you are in the to mid to high 80s is great.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as I know, I mean, Griffin Claw is the one brewery that is their efficiency is just out of this world. It's like 95% or 96%. But they bought this custom grain press
very
system.
Very familiar with that. Big money.
Oh, big money. Yeah, beautiful. I would love to have it, but
I'm sure
there's only like 5 in the entire world or something like that.
I remember reading all about it when they first opened, and I've been through that brewery. And they actually this last weekend I did a charity bike event that I do annually, and Griffin Claw is my sponsor of that. So that's funny you say Griffin Claw. So like last weekend, for example, we had 500 bikers because the weather was so nice. We leave from Clubhouse BFD in Rochester Hills, and we bike on the Clinton River and the Pink Creek Trails, and then at the halfway point, the Pink Creek Cider Mill. So kind of halfway to Lake Orion. They get a Griffin Claw beer and 2 donuts, and then they get another beer at the back end. So we went through 1,000 donuts and 1,000 beers.
Wow.
But talk about efficiency, because they sell Norm's Gateway and Blue Sky and 15 packs now. That's mm-hmm. what we bought. We just bought 1,000 of those basically for the event. Like, talk about efficient.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot of breweries can do it that way, but it's because of how they set themselves up, and then they'll be more efficient because they're opening up that second facility, which was next to where we started the event.
Yeah. So, hence over at Clubhouse.
Yeah. Hence them being a sponsor. So long story short, I get it about the efficiency. And I think to most people, they just want to have good beer, and they don't always think about all those things. But you, as a business owner, and you're trying to, you know, make money.
That's maximizing your costs and
totally.
Profit.
You want to maximize your investment in this, and a lot of people just don't always think about that. They just think, why can't you get more beer out to me quicker, right?
Yeah.
So at the Oxford location, you know, that's a cool part of it, right? So how many taps do you have there?
So we put 48 taps in.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. Now, and people ask me all the time, how are you going to keep 48 taps running? Okay. We have no expectation of 48 taps of different beers. You have to understand, we have the longest bar in Oakland County. It is 68 feet long.
That's crazy. When you said that to me, I'm like, that's amazing. 68 yeah. feet. When I walked in, I was just like, wow, this really keeps going.
Yeah. So first off, our main beers will be replicated on two different banks of taps, so the bartenders don't have to walk 20 miles a day to pour beers.
I'm sure they appreciate that.
Yeah. And then we're also doing nitrous taps, so we'll have nitrogen beers on tap. We're going to put all of our wine on tap. We have a wine license there. And eventually we're going to do sodas, and those will all be on tap. So the goal is to maintain around 24 beers at all times.
With some being doubled up.
Yeah, with some being doubled up, and then the rest will be wines and sodas and stuff like that.
Do you plan to ever dabble with hard cider with that since you got the wine license?
We do. We have cider. Actually, Warren is pretty much turned into a cidery.
Oh, interesting. I didn't pick up on that before. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So we're pretty much just doing cider and Warren, and our license allows us to move it back and forth between locations.
It does. Okay.
And then we just brew all the beer up in Oxford. So that's kind of how we're doing it.
So because you have a brewery license.
And a winery license
and a winery
at
license.
Both locations.
So because, oh, okay. I got it. So you have the dual license at both that allows you to move that. Okay. I feel like I don't always understand that, even though I get it explained to me a lot. It's like it leaves my brain as fast as it goes in there.
Right.
But I understand the winery license part of it. So for the wine, then are you buying that from someone else and you're just serving it on site?
No, we make it.
Or you are making that too. Okay. Oh, very cool. Did you know much about making wine?
No, I know nothing about making wine.
I appreciate your honesty. Okay.
No, I hired a home winemaker to do it. You know, some of them are simple kits, and some of them are he went and got, you know, grapes during harvest and made a few.
Oh, that's fun.
So
okay,
you know, we have a good mix of stuff.
Oh, cool. Well, that's why I can't wait to bring my wife in there, my non beer drinking wife.
Yeah.
So she can have some fun with that. That's a good so. Did you see an immediate need for that then by coming into Oxford that you couldn't just do beer?
No, it was just something I always wanted to do because even in Warren, we were just always asked about beer.
Sure.
I was always getting a winery license because I'm a cider nut. I love hard cider.
Okay. I'm a big fan. So with my wife being a non-beer drinker, she loves cider. And it's made me, you know, try to get uber smart about it. And we're really living in a cool time now. I mean, you're a good example. You're making cider. So I'd say 5-6 years ago, that would have been non-existent. You just wouldn't see it. It would have been a very novel idea to see a brewery really do that.
Yeah.
Now lots of breweries have kind of stuck their toe in the water, and they're doing that.
I used to go to, I don't know if you remember, Cost Plus World Market.
I do, yeah.
So
the futon in my basement's from Cost Plus World Market.
Nice. They were the first place I ever saw that did custom six packs.
Oh yeah, you know, that's a good point. It probably was for me too. When I lived in Chicago, that would be my big thrill. I lived out in the west suburbs, and I'd go to the one in Naperville, Illinois, and that was my fun, was going in there. This was really before we had a lot of stores where you could do that at.
Yeah. And I always went to the one in Ann Arbor in Westland.
Okay.
And they used to have a whole row of hard ciders from around the world. And so I started trying, you know, like Woodpecker from England, right, and some German ciders. And that was when I discovered Woodchuck. And now that Woodchuck and Woodpecker are kind of combined now and they're one company, they are doing some amazing specialty ciders now. Their ginger cider is out of this world. They're doing all these seasonals. They're barrel aging now, and it's awesome.
You know, it's funny though that probably a lot of people don't give them the respect.
No,
I mean they really were doing that when no one was doing that in America, and now with I think when Angry Orchard came onto the market, so the Boston Beer Company brand,
mm-hmm.
And they probably pushed Woodchuck out of a lot of markets with the scale they have. That's probably unfortunate,
yeah.
I think. I'm sure it also made Woodchuck step up their game more because there's definitely a lot of more one-offs they're doing and seasonals that are doing that are really good. I'd say their distribution has probably gotten affected, though, from Angry Orchard.
So, yeah, Angry,
good, bad, indifferent. That's, and, I think, what's happened.
What's the other one? Strongbow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Strongbow's another. Now, have you noticed, like, Strongbow's really come – almost like reintroduce themselves back into the market
mm-hmm.
with not English style, so not that dry English style, more I'd say Americanized styles with lots of different flavor variants.
Right.
It's last year I do three different events on the Detroit Princess that are beer tasting events, but I always offer cider, a couple ciders on that. And last year I remember I was walking through Meijer and they had this end cap and it was full of like these small 4-pack cans. And when I mean small, I mean they were like 6-ounce cans in a 4-pack. So it was $1 per 4-pack and it was four different variants of Strongbow. Of like, I can't even tell you the flavors, like cherry, orange blossom, you know, yada, 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 right? $1. I just sat there. I remember I called my wife. I'm like, do you want some of these? She's like, yeah, I do. It's $1 for four of those little guys, right?
Yeah.
So I remember like, I think I bought the whole end cap out. Like I grabbed some box that some guy was stocking. I just threw a ton of them. And I ended up bringing them on for part of the boat event. We had them on there. People were just like, wow, what are these? I've never seen Strongbow. And I'm like, well, really, they're this English dry cider that's been around for like ever that you probably forget about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you probably saw it on tap at an Irish pub or something,
right?
Unless they had Magners on. And that was probably all you thought about it, right? And now look in Michigan, think of all the ciders we have here. I mean, how fun. I've gotten to, you know, besides what Blake's has done in the market, my wife and I are big fans of Vandermill. You a fan of Vandermill? Yeah,
Vandermill is excellent. Yeah. I love Blake's. Schwartz has got Star Cut ciders now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exploding.
Yeah, you know, I think people forget that, at least in Michigan, it was really Uncle John's that got the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And what's that guy's name at Uncle John's? Something Beck. Yeah, I mean, like he really kind of opened it up for a lot of these other, I'd say, family cideries that eventually started making hard cider. And now breweries like yourself are kind of jumping in there and giving your kind of brew side to cider, which is fun.
Yeah, and it's actually saved a lot of orchards. So, you know, there's a few years ago where we had the bad weather and the orchards lost all their crops and everything, and now they're either doing their own hard cider or they're dedicated to selling custom blends to breweries or cideries or wineries. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, so I know that's what Motor City Brewworks does in downtown Detroit. And they've been making cider for a long time. But Dan, one of the partners there, he's kind of a cider nerd too.
Yeah.
And loves to talk about crazy, you know, heirloom apple trees and things and stuff that I don't really know anything about, but I always find it real interesting.
Yeah.
And I like to kind of hear about that. And I'm glad to see it. I want to say, like, you know, where the cider world is now is where craft beer was here, like, what, 10 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. Something like that. So I'm excited to see how that progresses.
That's one of my things I want to progress to. So in a couple of years, I'm really hoping to spin off a cider company and open a location just for cider and wine. And
I think it's coming. When I was in Chicago, my wife and I were in Chicago right before Christmas. We went to this amazing cider bar they had there. The name just totally eludes me, but it was in like a real cool, trendy area. And wow, their list was just, I'll bet you they had a 20-page list of stuff. There were so many things on there I had never heard of. It was very international. Local and international. And wow, I mean, we dropped some coin, let me tell you, in a time out there. But that was like her day, right? Like my wife doesn't get to do it in that capacity. And I think there's a lot of people out there that would do that, that would go there and they would, you know, enjoy cider all in. I mean, you pretty much got to be all in. They had some beers, but I didn't dare drink them while I was there with her.
Right.
I was all in for cider. And I think you're right. I think we're going to see more of that. For sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
In Michigan now they have, what is it, is it Michigan Cider Association or maybe it's Hard Cider Association? There is an association now of all the cider makers here in Michigan. I feel like I'm not saying the acronym right. Like,
yeah, it could, I don't be know.
MCA. I don't know. And they've been doing these cider weeks really out in Grand Rapids where Vandermill's based out of. And in fact, I think that starts this week or next week. They have about a week's worth of fun stuff, and they've done some cider festivals, kind of, you know, to a lesser degree, what Blake's has definitely done with their cider days.
Yeah.
Which is another place I remember seeing you at last summer, August.
I love cider days.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I mean, what a great place to do that at, because they pretty much have all the space you'd ever want to do something like that, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, if you just had this huge farm. I took a group out there. First time I got to bring a Buster group in there was on St. Patrick's Day, actually. I don't remember if I was telling you about that when I saw you last. It was fun. I basically went up Van Dyke and I did Brooks Brewing and Brown Iron Brew House, and then we continued on to Blake's. And I hadn't seen all their equipment they've been adding back in there. Have you seen all that in there? It's totally amazing. I mean, I've been to Cider Days like the last, well, they've done that about 3 years now. But I had never gone back in there. I was blown away. And the cider maker and some awesome staff were hanging out. We had like 30 people with us. And it ended up being a real nice day on St. Patrick's Day. And wow, they were pouring pitchers of cider right out of fermenters to us. And we were kind of in second heaven. They've really kind of blown up the varieties.
Yeah.
And they're really experimenting. I guess that's the power of having a good investment backbone in what they're doing, meaning they already have a great business out there. They've added this into it. So now they're not scared to throw money at it.
Right.
You know, call it what you want. That's definitely what they're doing. And they've put a lot of product out in the marketplace. And I'm sure I'd say like on this side of the state, they got to be selling the most cider. And I'd say on the west side, it would be probably, you know, Vandermill's probably doing a huge percentage. But I would say, you know, prior to that, Vandermill was popping themselves up on the east side here. And I would say that's probably less now as a result of what Blake's has been doing.
Right.
You know, wouldn't you agree a little bit with that?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's not that I like both, and, you know, I'm rooting for both of them, trust me. But that's the power of the scale, I think, that Blake's has kind of started to create.
Yeah, they're pumping it out like crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say even at first, I might have been skeptical. And I'm not anymore, for sure. I'm really kind of bought in. So now when I hear you talking about it and you're excited about it, that gives me a lot of hope that, you know, I believe there's probably more brewers that feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, what do you think of the Brewers Guild pretty much cutting cider out from festivals? And I don't want to put you in a spot to say anything bad about the Guild. Just in general, like, what's your thoughts of, okay, you're a member of the Michigan Brewers Guild, and it's a beer festival, and obviously they've tried to keep it that way.
Yeah.
And a little bit of cider is kind of eased in there, but they've always really limited that to be like, if you're a brewery, how it used to work was you could have one cider on. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah. That was it.
Right. Yeah. And this has been a discussion for the last couple of years with the Guild. And, you know, I can kind of see it both ways. I mean, personally, Gabe, my opinion was the Guild should evolve into encompassing all craft alcoholic products for the state of Michigan. It should become more of a, I don't know what to call it, Michigan Alcoholics Guild or Alcoholics Guild. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I totally understand what you mean.
But its foundation is a Brewers Guild. So I completely understand their standpoint of, we're here to support breweries, not wineries, not cideries, not distilleries. Our trade group and our bread and butter is breweries. So I completely understand that. And they've done great things for breweries. And their festivals are the only ones that are actually like licensed with the state.
Oh, they're the best ones.
Yeah.
And you and I have been to lots of festivals, so we know what we're talking about.
They get special permits and treatment from the state just for their festivals, where, you know, you go to these other festivals and, you know, they're ran as a charity basically in order to put the festival on.
Most definitely, including the charity bike event I just ran last weekend. For me to hand out a beer like that, I'm working for a nonprofit, and that's the model of pretty much everything else outside of what the Guild does.
Right. So I completely understand their point. They don't want to disrupt that whole thing. They got a good thing going with the MLCC, and really they're focused as beer. So let them focus 100% on beer. I mean, if you, no offense to other breweries, but if you really want to be a cider company, then
Go
be a cider company, or form another company that's a cider company, and then join the Cider Guild.
Sure.
And work it that way. So I can see both sides.
Yeah, I guess it's a progression of those other industries, and they all want to feel like they're part of that growth. And as more people have gotten into those other aspects, or breweries have dabbled in both of that, then they just want to do it all in the same place. I see the convenience in that. To a consumer, the consumer doesn't care, do they? I think they just want to try what they want to try. So to them, it's like, whatever. So for example, my friend Paul Starr Just did Beer Fest at the ballpark. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he brings kind of everything in on that. He has mead. He has cider. Sometimes has some spirits, right? Even a little bit of wine at times. And he does that because people have kind of asked for it.
Right.
Like my wife doesn't go to any of the guild festivals because she doesn't drink beer. And so be it. The guild festivals are busy and they're great and I love them and I'll continue to go to them. But that leaves opportunities for some of these other festival organizers to decide how they do that.
Right.
Or like a Blake's that does like a Cider Days, or like Bee Nectar that does like their mead festivals, and they invite other people at times, you know, to mix into some of those things. Those are the opportunities that are out there then. The guild just doesn't have to be in that, and they stay focused on what they're good at.
Right. You know? The guild ultimately is the Michigan Brewers Trade Association, right? They're our trade group. They're backing breweries, so they should focus on beer and brewing. The wine industry has their own trade group. You know, people need to understand Michigan wine was growing and becoming micro wine and craft wine long before the craft beer movement.
Very true.
And
I was going to wineries more before I was going to breweries.
Yeah. The Michigan wine scene has been growing, growing, growing. And then the craft beer scene came in. And now the craft distillery scene's coming in, and they all kind of cannibalize from each other, right? So
surely
the wine trade group was pissed at the beer trade group because they're pulling market share. So, and now the distillery, you know, people are pulling shares away from the breweries. It's a cycle of life in the industry, but it's another argument for just be a beer trade group and support that beer industry, and let the wine people support the wine people, the distillery people support the distillery people, and do what's best for your constituencies or your members or however you want to say it.
Yeah, that's a good business case for that. I really get that.
Yeah.
And that's a good discussion. Because all that's just happened, it was kind of timely in my head. I really haven't had a show since I know that came down, or at least the change is going
to
be made.
Yeah, I think it would be awesome to have one encompassing entity for everybody who makes some sort of alcohol in the state. But at the same time, who do they focus on? Because the laws are different between each one of those.
Different licensing, different tax.
Yeah, yeah, everything's different between those industries. So
I feel like you couldn't do that.
No, I don't think it would work.
Someone had suggested that to me one time. I thought, I don't understand how you would do it. For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, how very interesting. Okay. Well, we're rocking along here, aren't we?
How far along are we?
Oh, we're like 50 minutes in. Amazing. That's how it works, though, once you get talking about alcohol, isn't it? So let's talk about what else you're working on while falling down. So you got the Warren location. You got what you're doing in Oxford. But you also got stuff in distribution. So let's talk a bit about how you're working hard to get some things out in distribution, some draft and packaged, and who you're working with to do that.
Yeah. So, you know, the whole reason for Oxford is distribution was blowing up. And this is just draft sales. So we wanted to use Oxford as our new distribution point and everything else. Well, we opened Oxford and it's all sold out. We can't keep up again.
Bam, same problem.
Same problem, just on a larger scale. So we're now doing contract brewing with a couple of other breweries. The biggest one right now is Harson's Island out in Marysville. And
they have a big setup in there. I've brought people through there. That used to be an old, was it a Hostess outlet?
It was a Hostess
store, right?
So factory. It's a big building. Yeah, it's got a great area. They got a 20 barrel system. It's nice. Mill room, lots of cooling. I'm just like, man, this is like,
it's what you
I
want.
I so want this.
You want one of those in your backyard, don't you?
Yeah, I just wish it wasn't in Marysville.
Yeah, I understand.
But no, great guys. And so we brew Scurvy Dan there.
Okay.
And we can pump it out 20 barrels at a time. In fact, that's where I was coming from today when I was late, is our first 20 barrel batch of the summer was getting kegged up, and our distributors already bought it all. So the whole batch is gone already.
Wow.
So we have another batch
in
the pipeline.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it looks like that's just going to be a dedicated facility to brew Scurvy Dan for 6 months.
Damn. Okay. So you got, so that was the first label approval you pushed for then? Is that?
So we're not canning yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
That is still all draft.
Okay. That's all draft.
Our goal is July to be canning Scurvy Dan, and we will be canning it out there, and we'll probably start with Michigan Mobile. And then work up
canning, they don't have a canning line there, do they?
No.
Okay.
No, they don't have anything for package there.
Oh, they don't have anything for package. I guess I didn't think about that. All right.
Yeah, they just kind of, they hand can a few things and
yikes,
hand bottle a few things for special releases, but that's okay, about it.
Oh, that's what I've seen then. Yeah, when I brought a group out there, I want to say it was last year, like in January. Yeah. That's right. Some people bought some bottles. I guess I didn't think about it, that those are just hand bottles.
Yeah, they don't really distribute them. They're the sell at the pub there. So, yeah, I was thinking Michigan Mobile to start out. We'll get some cans of Scurvy Dan, test the market in cans, and then Ninja Chicken to follow up behind that. So I'm hoping to start brewing Ninja Chicken out there this summer too.
Okay, cool. Well, I look forward to seeing more of that in the market, because I'd say it's been challenged, as you stated, to find it anywhere outside of your tap rooms.
Yeah, it's been tough. I mean, we've Buffalo Wild Wings, we got into a franchise there. We were in 6 locations all winter serving Ninja Chicken. We're now in Black Rock, the steakhouse.
Oh, yeah.
We're in several of their locations. So we're starting to get chain interest rather than just the little craft beer pubs.
Seems like that's a good angle, is to be in a chain with that. The chains want that.
Yeah.
They want to have a cool local brand that people are going to dig. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, so doubling down on our marketing and everything. So instead of like generic tap handles, you know, we have custom Ninja Chicken tap handles now.
One of those, by the way. I need to buy one of those from you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were talking a bit about it when we last met. I don't know if you knew this, I collect tap handles. So don't start doing that. Because it can get large and unwieldy, but I still do it. I mainly focus, I'd say, on Michigan brands, though, which is fun, and we have lots of options. And then folks like yourself create cool tap handles, and it makes me never want to stop. So that's a good problem.
Well, I'll make sure you get one.
Yeah, see, that's why I say it on air, so it's on record somewhere.
There you go.
You use the power I have, or at least the power I think I have, right, to try to get tap handles. That's funny. Well, very cool. I would say, what else? You got anything else you want to talk about? If not, we could wrap up this show. We're almost out of beer, so that's kind of important here.
I would say, all right, I just want to tell everybody our locations now. So
yeah, please do.
The original Warren, pub is at 2270 East 10 Mile it's at DeQuinder and 10 Mile.
So if you pass by McDonald's, you know you pass by it.
Yeah, it's right next to McDonald's. It's jammed between McDonald's and a flea market.
Yeah, if you make it to the old Kmart parking lot, you went too far, but you could park in there if you had to.
Yeah.
And you could walk back over, which is what I do when I bring bus groups out there. And the other location in Oxford is right in downtown?
Right downtown, 14 North Washington. If you're familiar with the area at all, we're right next to Red Knapp's, which is the big family restaurant there. We're just north of there. Share the same parking lot. We've worked out, we don't have food there. It's strictly a tasting room for the brewery, but we have wine, we have cider, we have beer, and we've worked out deals with local restaurants where they'll deliver right to your seat. So MC Witches, which is a excellent grilled sub, smoked sub shop,
just a few doors down,
you call them up, say you're at Falling Down, they deliver right to your seat, swipe your credit card, and they're out of there.
Oh, that's sweet. What a great setup.
Yeah.
I love that. I can't wait. My hope is to bring a bus group out there in December. Obviously, offline, I'll send you that information. But now that you're out there, you got another brewery homegrown right by you there. That gives me
that makes it nice and easy for you.
Oh, yes. Totally.
Right, one parking lot.
Pull the bus in one spot. Yeah. Bam, bam. And then I know in Lake Orion, there's someone working on cider in an industrial area there.
I haven't heard that one.
I know. And it's only because a friend mentioned it to me. And it's almost like I just said that and I can't think of the name of it. It's not a name. Sister something. I don't know. Come to me later when we're not recording the show. But and then I could even do Tilted Access potentially out in Lapeer as a fun 3-pack on that. So I look forward to bringing folks out. Obviously, they can go to Facebook and check out Falling Down Beer Company. There's also an Oxford Facebook page and an Oxford Instagram. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you pretty much got the trifecta.
Got all those, Falling Down Beer and then fallingdownbeer.com.
And fallingdownbeer.com. Well, I want to thank you, Mark, for coming on the show today. The Beer Tour Guy Show, episode 12. This is Steve Johnson. And listen next month when I bring in the – I keep saying Jame X, but I think it's Jam X. We'll go with that. And St. Clair Shores, and I got the owners, husband-wife team coming on the show. So I look forward to talking to them. But I want to thank Mark for his time here. And that'll do it for the Beer Tour Guy Show.